Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey, everybody. David Nagel. Welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast. I'm going to say something. I want you to write it down. There is a price for winning, and there is a price for leadership. I want you to write that down. I want you to keep that in front of you. I want you to carry it with you. I want you to read it every day. And I want you to use it in a comparison to where you are in your own psychology. If you're a business person, if you're trying to create the life that you desire, if you're trying to increase your finances, if you're trying to become the best at something, if I was you, I would carry around this around in your wallet or your purse for the rest of your life. Now, I'm going to tell you where the source of this came from and where you could go to find out more about it outside of what I'm going to cover on this podcast. I have been very deeply involved in The Last Dance. This specific quote comes from episode 7 of The Last Dance, right at the very end. However, I think you should watch the entire thing. The Last Dance, for those of you that don't know, is the 10-part docuseries that ESPN just released about the last year of Michael Jordan playing with the Bulls, their sixth championship, and everything that led up to that over the years of his career. And one of the main themes of this docuseries is the fact that Jordan basically was not the nice guy that he was presented to be in the Nike commercials, in the McDonald's commercials, in the Air Jordan commercials, you know, in the Be Like Mike commercials. You know, he's a charismatic, good-looking guy. He has almost a circus-like quality of people can't stop watching him on the court, even opposing, like when they would go to other cities, the fans could not separate the fact from they wanted their team to win, but they really loved to watch Michael play. So he had that charisma in his playing that was going on. However, you have to realize something. People see other people through their own lens. They don't see other people in the truth of who that other person is actually being. And I think it's kind of genius that whoever's behind the creative people and Jordan himself, who is behind this docuseries, has waited for 20 years basically to release it, because it gives you a completely different view. And for many people, it busts their bubble around who Jordan actually was. Now, here's the thing. There's been books that have come out. There have been interviews that come out. There have been other players that have come out over the years that have basically talked trash and smack about Jordan, saying that he was an asshole, you know, that he treated them like shit. But he was not from a place of just being mean and try to tear you down, but try to get the best out of everybody that was around him, because he wanted nothing more in life than to be a winner and to be a champion in everything that he did. So the controversy is basically like, what do you think of Jordan when you hear the truth that he was extremely tough on everybody that was around him, and he would make your life miserable if you could not get up to his standard of actually playing, versus the fact that he's probably the best basketball player ever. He is one of the best athletes that anybody has ever seen. And his drive to win, to be his best, and the consistency behind it is unparalleled to anybody that we really know of in our lifetime. So he's deeply admired for those qualities. And of course, the downside of those qualities, if you consider it a downside, is that the idea that we're raised with of being nice had to basically be thrown in a trash can. Now, for years, I have been telling people, nice is not a value. Kind is a value, but kind has a place. Kind is a value that has a place that we use when it's appropriate to use that word and when it's appropriate to use that way of being. And it and there's times when it's not appropriate to be kind. But nice is often a mask that people wear so that other people will like them. It very often is something that is hiding the true behavior, the true emotions, the truth about an individual, just so that they can show up in a social situation of some kind and be accepted into that situation. And what we see in this docuseries, as they peel a layer of the onion back, as you go through this, is that Jordan threw that idea out the window like bullshit. He's like, I'm not playing it. I'm not actually doing it. And there's many things that are fascinating about this, and I'm going to get into some of them here, but I really, really encourage you to watch it, whether you're a sports fan or a Jordan fan, it doesn't matter. Watch it from a point of somebody that took excellence to the highest standard and value in his life and maintained it. Like, this is one of the things that is even amazing about it, because I think everybody gets to, has experienced moments of excellence, like where we've momentarily stepped into our excellence, a great performance, a great seminar, a great stage play, a great, you know, whatever it is a person does, we've all had moments of excellence in our life. What's fascinating about Jordan was that it was constant. It was consistent his whole career, all the way from high school through college into the majors, out of the majors into baseball. It's a very interesting story that they present in there when he actually went to go play semi-pro ball for 15 months or 18 months, whatever it was. And when you listen to the people that were coaching him there, they will tell you, even with all the criticism, because he got trashed for making that decision for himself. The coaches that were coaching him will tell you that he was definitely on the road to be playing in the major leagues. Like, he was progressing that fast that he could have played in the major leagues had he actually stuck with it and not gone back to basketball. But I digress. Going back into basketball, leaving the Bulls, going over to Washington, and then, you know, now in the things that he's actually doing after competing in sports. So here's a couple of things that I think that we have to take into consideration, because while most of us, and I really believe this, I actually heard Joe Rogan say this one time. He said the average person will never be able to wrap their mind around just how much this guy needed to win, and his dedication to his craft, singularly for such a long period of time. Like, most people will never be able to fathom that kind of a commitment. And Rogan's not the only person that I've heard say this. But here's something about this that I find very fascinating. The question is why? Why? There are so many people, like, I'm in the industry of helping people become successful. I was fascinated with people that became ultra successful back when I was a kid. And if you get into this industry and you stay in the industry long enough and you learn and you grow, you learn from people that are much more successful than yourself. You coach and mentor and teach others that are less successful than you. You keep growing yourself and moving forward. The one constant problem really seems to be the human being getting themselves to do the highest quality of work consistently. This is what really seems to be the problem. Probably the number one question that I've gotten in 20 years, and the question that plagued me my childhood and my teenage years and my very early adult years was, how do I get myself to do the things that I fucking cannot stand to do? I quit high school because I could not get myself to do the goddamn work. I hated it with a freaking passion. My whole last year that I was in high school, I cut class constantly. I was never even there. Then I'm like, this is just ridiculous. I'm leaving. And I quit and I just went to work. But there was a flip side to that personality in myself. If it was some kind of work that I loved, I had no problem doing it. I still have no problem doing it. But I do have a problem getting myself to do things that I absolutely don't like to do. So you might think to yourself, well, just don't do things that you don't like to do. We all have to do things that we don't like to do. There are things in life that we have to do as being a responsible person that we don't like to do. There are many things that we don't like to do that if we get ourselves to a point of some success that we can hire other people to do. That's definitely for sure. And I think for me personally, getting myself to do something that I don't like to do has definitely gotten better with time, age, and growth. But I would be a complete liar if I didn't say that there was still that little piece in me that I wrestle with from time to time. And I see it with other people. So people will ask me, David, how do I control my thinking? How do I stop the voice in my head that's trying to convince me not to get up early, not to work out, not to eat healthy food, not to be an asshole to my wife or my kids? How do I control that voice that tells me not to make sales calls, not to do all the practice, not to do all the things that will actually lead to my success, and get sucked into all of the behaviors that will lead to my absolute and complete failure? So, you know, we take people through all different kinds of mindset techniques, through different stages of awareness. I just did a real amazing teaching on the how to face uncertainty in a time of crisis, where I took people through the 7 levels of awareness. And I'll just run through those really quick so I can reference back to them so they make sense. So the 7 levels of awareness are, how do we go from basically an unconscious stage to mastery in our lifetime? How do we be aware of each level when we get to each level? And what are the values and the standards of each level? So here's what the levels are. It's animal, like for basically survival consciousness. That's number 1. Mass consciousness is number 2. That's when we think like the masses. Aspiration is number 3, when we finally wake up to some desire in our heart that tells us to do something different. Individual is 4, when we step into our own individuality. Discipline is 5, when we take control over our own choices and commitments in life. 6 is experience. That is the feedback that we get by doing the thing that we're consciously choosing to doing. And then the repetition of that experience leads to number 7, which is mastery. I was thinking about this as I was getting ready to teach it. And I was thinking, you know, if you look at number 1, 2, and 3, animal, mass, and aspiration, even I would even say some degree to number 4, most people live bouncing back between 1 and 4 their entire life with what it is that they're doing. And when they bounce back and forth between 1 and 4, the problem that they're facing is that the genetic and the environmentally programmed side of our mind is constantly fighting for dominance in our thinking. So animal is basically survival. That means that we're only going to do what's necessary to survive, and we're not going to do any more. Masses is when we don't want to think at all, and we just follow the herd, right? We completely follow the herd in life, and the herd is going to tell us what to do, where to go. We're not thinking for ourselves. We're just doing that. We're consumed with a lot of fears, a lot of superstitions, a lot of laziness. We're waiting for other people to make decisions, and we follow that. Aspiration, to me, is both, it's a double-edged sword. Like it can also be, like, it's great. Everybody needs to get an aspiration to do something. Aspiration's what took Jordan into dedicating his life to being the best basketball player ever. However, most people never leave the damn dream phase of aspiration. They get stuck in the dream phase. The dream phase is like a fucking mind orgasm, right? You just stay in this this willowy phase in your mind, dreaming that you have all these different levels of success, and you have fame, and you have money, and you have the hot guy or the hot gal, and the shoes, and the cars, and the travel, and like everything is peachy and whatever. You're just running a fantasy in your mind over and over again. Here's the interesting thing. It's always or usually the end result of years of hard work that you're playing with in this dream. It's never about the process to get there. And we don't do anything with it. So we just stay in that phase. And we keep asking questions. How do I get my mind to do this? How do I get my mind to do that? How do I get my mind to do something else? The key between the dream phase and the individual, I think, is when we realize that if we're ever going to do anything, responsibility has to bridge that gap. And we have to take responsibility for the way that we think, the way that we feel, and the way that we behave every day. Otherwise, we'll never leave the dream phase. And we have to be responsible for our thoughts. So here's where I think that this major difference comes in. And here is where I think Jordan made this choice in his life consciously. In number seven, in the seventh episode of The Last Dance, he says, and I'm quoting him, "There is nothing I would not do to win." There is nothing I would not do to win. And he's being dead serious when he says that. Now, most people, if you say you have to, if you want to win, you have to get to a place where there is nothing you would not do. There was nothing you would not sacrifice to win. They're just simply not willing to do that. Not only are they not willing to do it externally with different things or people in their life, they're not willing to do it internally. So let's talk about what that looks like internally. It means you have to sacrifice any thought of failure, any thought of, not doing the work, any thought of not practicing, any thought of doing something different in your mind than what you should be doing to master what it is that you're going to do. You're going to abandon those thoughts in your mind that will cause you to consider not doing something. And this seems to be extremely difficult for people who can't seem to get there, because they don't realize they're the one that's doing the entertaining in their mind of something that they don't want to do. Jordan didn't tolerate those thoughts. He didn't play at that level, and it's a different level. If you say, "I'm going to give up the way that I think completely, I'm going to let it go. I'm not going to spend any time there. I'm only going to think the thoughts that are going to move me forward." Now think about this. These are not the thoughts. "I can do it. I'll get up early in the morning. I will work hard." It's not the positive affirmations of, "I'm working hard. I'm getting there. I'm doing it." That is still in the gap. That is still bridging the gap if you're thinking those thoughts. Jordan was playing a completely different game than anyone else. He was not thinking about how he does it or how he gets himself to do it. He was dissecting every weak area and immediately creating strategies to strengthen those weak areas in himself, in the game, and then he would dissect all the weak areas in every single player to find out what his strategy was going to be to beat that person. He studied relentlessly. He worked out relentlessly, regardless of whatever was on his schedule. There's a fantastic story in The Dance where Jordan is asked to make, what is the name of the movie that he made with Bugs Bunny? Shit, what the hell is the name of that movie? Space Jam. So he signs on to make this movie, Space Jam, and he goes out to California to do this. And it's at the same time he comes off of this big, he just went back to basketball. Basketball ended, they lost, and Jordan had a problem. His body had been conditioned to play baseball for 15 months. He had a baseball body. So he had to work with Tim Grover every day to get his body back into basketball shape. So the studio that did Space Jam built him a basketball dome on the set of where they were shooting the movie. And Jordan would be there first thing in the morning working out. So it was a complete basketball court with wooden floor and hoops, and it was enclosed. It had weight benches, everything he needed. Basically, what they did was they reconstructed his training center from Deerfield on the movie set in California. So this is the guy's schedule. He has a 7 a.m. shooting time. Before 7 a.m., he was working out and playing ball for 2 hours. They would go to lunch for 2 hours after his 7 a.m. So he would, from 7 a.m. to whatever, 12, let's say 12 o'clock, he's shooting this movie. They would take a two-hour break for lunch. During that lunch, he would go back into the basketball dome, and he would work out again. When they got done shooting for the day, say 5, 6 o'clock at night or whatever, he brought in all the players, all the top players in the world that played basketball, and he would play for 3 hours against these guys every single night. They wouldn't get done till somewhere around midnight, and he would be back up in the morning to do it again. Everybody said the same thing. They had absolutely no idea how he was managed to pull that schedule off. How did he shoot a movie all day long? He had to learn lines. He had to learn how to act. He had to learn how to take direction. He had to do everything that you have to do to learn to make a movie. He had coaches that taught him how to do this. And on top of it, he retrained, rebuilt, and replayed and learned all of his opponents, his new opponents in basketball, because he actually brought them into play against him during this time. And he did this all summer long. So the story is basically this. Jordan did this all the time. Like, he had a relentless schedule of working out, dissecting anything that was weak in him, doing it over and over again till he turned the weakness into a strength, dissecting all the weaknesses in everybody that he played with, which then taught him how to figure out how he was going to win that game. And he did this throughout his entire career. If we're sitting around trying to figure out and argue with ourselves if we're getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go work out or not, we're not even in the same building as where Jordan's mind was. But he made the decision. Apparently, there was, I believe it was his high school basketball coach. This is also in the docuseries, by the way. They interview the high school basketball coach. I believe it was high school. It could have been, it wasn't Dean Smith, but it might have been Dean Smith's assistant coach. Anyway, the guy says to Jordan, "I just don't understand why we lost." Or Jordan says to the guy, "I don't understand why we lost." He's like, "I worked really, really hard or whatever." And the guy, he said, what do you want? What do you want to be? What do you want to do? And he said, "I want to be the best basketball player ever." And basically the moral of that story was that he told Jordan, then you have to work harder than every other basketball player. And Jordan was like, he didn't realize that at first. And then he told the guy, he said, "I will work harder than anybody that you've ever seen." And if you ask every one of his coaches, because everybody that's ever worked with this guy is in this docuseries, they all say the same thing. He worked harder. He had a work ethic like nobody has ever seen, and he sustained it for an entire career. So at that age, in high school or right at college, he makes a decision in his mind that doing just enough, and just enough is basically, that's a perception, right? So just enough really is mass thinking if you think about it in this situation. If he says, "I work just as hard as everybody else on the team," that's just enough. That's just enough to get by, even if it's an upper level league team. So it's very easy for us, even if we think we're moving up in life, to go into mass consciousness around what is the norm at that level. If we want to be better than the best, if we want to excel in what we do in life, we have to get out of the mass consciousness of that level, and we have to think higher than that level. And to Jordan's credit, apparently he takes this, he makes this decision very early on in his life. He talks about a story when he first comes to the Chicago Bulls, where they were, in those days, there was apparently a lot of smoking, a lot of drugs, a lot of cocaine, a lot of partying, a lot of drinking going on. And Jordan's a rookie. And he said they're in Peoria. He's looking for all of his teammates. He's walking up and down the hotel. He knocks on this door and he hears somebody behind the door go, shh, 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 shh. And they go, who is it? And he says, it's MJ. And so they let him in. And when a guy opens the door, almost the whole team is in there. And then he's like, you got guys doing cocaine over here. You got your weed guys over here. You've got a bunch of women over there. And he saw that. And in his mind, he was like, if they come in here right now and raid this place and I'm in here, I'm just as guilty as everybody else in this room. So he made a decision that day. He was out. He was not going to hang around and party with everybody else. He was going to dedicate himself to the work that needed to be done. So it's not like he doesn't have the same temptations as everybody else in life. We all have a temptation to go do something that's easy or go do something that's hard that's going to move us forward. And if we don't have the mindset correct, if we hadn't already made a pre-decision as to the standard that we were going to show up with in life, then what ends up happening is that the easy thing becomes too seductive in the moment, and we go with the easy thing, and then we don't get the thing that we say that we want. Then a person will talk to somebody like me, and they'll say, how can't I get myself to think? You know, how do I get these conversations in my head to stop? How do I get myself to do the thing? Well, we're forgetting something so major around this idea. Our greatest gift, our greatest power is our ability to choose. And listen, folks, I'm saying this to you right now for my benefit, just as much for you. Like, I have to remind myself of this constantly. We have the ability to choose regardless of the voice in our head, regardless of this fucking coronavirus, regardless of any obstacle that we currently have right now. But if we take our mind and we forget that we have the ability to choose, we instantly move into the seduction of whatever it is that's in front of us. And for a lot of people, it's just sheer ass laziness. I know I don't want to do it right now. I'm tired. We create a story in our mind that gives us the perfect exit from the thing that we're supposed to do, and we don't do it. And I can hear what some people are thinking right now. But what if I am tired? What if I have to do something else? What if I have to take care of my family? What if blah, 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 blah? Ask yourself right now if that's what's going through your head. Why is your mind going there? Because it wants to get away from this commitment so fast. It's trying to get you to agree with some kind of fucked up logic in your head to draw you away from making that commitment. Really think about this. For whatever reason, which I don't know, I really don't know what the reason was, because all that he ever says was, this is what he wanted. He made that commitment. And the commitment was very, very serious to him. Now, I was having a conversation before we recorded this with Brandon, which we'll talk about in the upcoming episode, about, I'm a little astonished, actually. You have people that get to the NBA level of success, and you would think to yourself, at that level, these guys would be like the elite. And they are. To us, they're the elite because these are the highest forms of the sports that, you know, that we see. With these professional sports or the Olympics, these are the highest presentations of this that we see. And yet I hear an interview with Kobe Bryant. And he talks about how he's astounded when he gets to the NBA that most of the guys that he meets in the NBA are not there to win big. They're there to maximize the amount of time that they can play in the NBA so that they can fulfill the financial win on their contract. So there, I think we also have to consider the idea of what it is that we're doing and how much safety is based in what we're thinking and how much the idea of safety might be infecting our thought around the idea of not doing something that actually pushes the limit and shows us what we could actually do if we're 100% committed to it. So when I heard Kobe say that, it really floored me. It really, really floored me that he was saying that there's that many people in that arena that don't want to play for the same desire to win as Jordan did or Kobe did or some of the other greats, you know, in life. So it makes you wonder if we know that people abdicate choice, if we know that even at higher levels, people settle for mass thinking because we can get away with it, right? So if you're already at the top, if you have 10, 12 guys, 15 guys on a team, and everybody decides that here's the level of greatness, but because everybody else is below them, nobody knows that there's a level higher. We don't actually know that they're settling for something. We don't realize that until a Jordan shows up who shows us just how much they are settling, or till a Kobe shows up and shows them just how much they actually are settling. Now, why is this important to us? Because if we don't have models, if we don't have figures, if we don't have heroes, if we don't have people that we see in life that have really pushed the bar beyond the mediocre, we really don't, it becomes very difficult to grasp the tangible around how far we could actually go ourselves. I think we also have to be very careful to even think to ourselves for one moment that there was something very different about Jordan that's different than us, because there isn't. Yes, he had a magnificent talent in his basketball game, but if you really read between the lines, if you study what this guy did, because I've been going over his stuff for a long, long time, and I kind of just got back into it because The Dance came out and I really wanted to see that. So then I drove back into interview. Like, that's what I do. I get obsessed about it. I jump back into the interviews, the books, everything. I noticed something that I didn't pick up on before, and that was that there were several people that said when he was a high school player, and when he was in, I think when he was, even when he was in his first starting in college, nobody really saw that this guy was going to be the Michael Jordan that we know today. And looking back on that, when you hear people talk about that, that were involved with him, they were like, yeah, he was a great player, but nobody had any idea that he was going to turn into what he turned into. But then there was something that Jordan said that made all the difference. And this is important, so get ready to take notes on this. He has, if you look back, you can look this up on the internet, it's in The Dance. He has something that he did that's known in history. It's called the shot. It's one, he won the winning shot for North Carolina when he was playing for his college team. And it was an astounding shot. It was basically at the buzzer. He wins the game. You know, they win the championship or whatever the hell it was that they were playing for at the time. And Jordan talks about after that he realized at that point he could do big things in basketball. If he could make that shot, he could do big things. And what it did was it increased his confidence. He got a tremendous confidence boost. And then Dean Smith said it was after he made that shot that you saw a different Jordan come out. When he came back the next year, you saw a completely different level of player that just blew everybody's mind. So it was confidence. So it's fascinating because he was playing, he was trying, he was working hard, but until he did that one thing, he didn't have the confidence that opened up his imagination to just see just how far he could go. But when he saw that, it was like he locked it in, and that became the new level for this guy as far as the bottom went. And everything was working from there up from that point. So he would not let anything get in his mind. He would not let anything get in his experience that would knock him below that. And this is why he abandoned the idea of nice. He abandoned the idea of nice because he was so determined to win. And in his mind, he believed that he was playing a game that provided him that opportunity. He was not fucking about going to let anybody prevent him from experiencing that opportunity in that scenario. So if you didn't show up to play at the same level that he was going to play at, he was going to either drive you to do the best that you could or drive you out of the game, like quit. Kobe talked about something that was also very similar. And if you think about this, because you can create whatever kind of story around these guys that you want at this point. This is the deal at the level that they're playing. They're playing to win at that level. And if there's like if that's what your dream is, if that's what you want, if that is the agreement that you've made within the structure of something that has the potential to provide that, which all professional sports do, anything that shows up in there doesn't deserve to be there if it's not going to be able to give the same kind of commitment and determination for everybody. Because what do? If you don't show up, you rob your team of that victory. You steal the dream from all of your teammates because you were too lazy or you couldn't make the commitment or you weren't willing to work out as hard or you weren't willing to overcome something. It's not just your loss. You're creating a very toxic, difficult situation for people who are at an elite level of commitment to actually break through. So I believe they have the right to say, fuck off. If you're not going to show up, get the fuck out of here. And yes, we're going to call you a dick and a prick and we're going to push you and we're going to throw a ball at your damn head until you get your head out of your ass and you start performing at the level you have the ability to. Otherwise, if you don't want to be at that level, that's fine. It's totally fine. But then you don't be here. You can't play with us if you're not going to play at that level. So was Michael Jordan nice? No. Was he kind? I do believe he was. Because here's the thing. One of the things that Jordan did was he created a contrast for people. He created a contrast for people to look at themselves and make a choice. Either show up or go do something different because you're in the wrong place for your life. For those of you that are building a dream, that are building a business, the day that you decided not to be in a job that you didn't like anymore and take direction for your own life, that's the day that you made a conscious choice to walk away from mediocrity. The difficulty that you're having in life, I will guarantee you, is because you're not demanding the rest of your life to keep pace with the standard of the dream that you want. If you want to live that dream, you need to take a damn hard look at how you're making decisions and really hold up where is your conscious standard around the price of winning and the price of leadership. Let that sink in. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.